Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Kerry Stevenson. Today I'm speaking with Chris Cairns. He's the Managing Director of Staveley Minerals. Staveley Minerals have got some very exciting news out of Victoria. Copper, gold, two of my favourite commodities. Chris is a dyed-in-the-wool explorer, and he's got some exciting news. But before we get into all of that and where they're at and how much work they've been doing, I spoke to Chris 6 months ago, and during that time at that interview, I said, wow, you've got a busy 6 months ahead. Well, he hasn't disappointed, and so I've asked him to come and give us an update here on Small Caps. Chris, good to see you. Welcome back to Small Caps.
Thank you very much, Kerry. Good to be here. Good to be here. And as you say, we've been busy.
You have been very busy. But before we get into the announcement, which is very exciting, for those people that may have missed it, that might have been sleeping under a rock, give us a brief overview of who you are and where you are.
Yeah, sure. As you say, dyed-in-the-wool explorer, geologist, 30 years experience, but really at the very pointy end of exploration. We came into this company from the former Integra Mining Management. We were looking for a new opportunity, having been taken over by Silver Lake in 2013. We picked up this project. It had some copper anomalies, and no one really understood the project. We thought that we had a few different ideas. We brought it to market in 2014 and probably spent 5 years in the wilderness, if you will, looking for a deeper porphyry. In the process of drilling holes down to about 1.8 kilometers, looking for this deeper porphyry, we had hit some intercepts of structurally controlled higher grade mineralization at depths of between, say, 500 and 800 meters depth. And one of our consultants, Scott Halley, said, well, why don't you stop looking for the porphyry? You're a junior explorer. You don't have really deep pockets. Why don't you just look for this higher grade structurally controlled stuff closer to surface? And the very next hole was the discovery hole, hole 50, into what we now call the Cayley Lode. 32 meters at almost 6% copper and a gram gold from 62 meters depth. And since that discovery hole in September 2019, we've been drilling nonstop into the Cayley Lode to define the resource. We've just last month finished that drilling, and now we're in the initial resource estimation phase, and we'll follow that up very, very closely within a month's time with a scoping study on what we're calling a phase one development. And really the phase one just deals with the shallow open pit mineralization that would probably represent, say, the first 5 years of a mine life. But we know that the mineralization continues to depths of up to 1,000 meters down. So the results that we've got out recently are about 500 meters depth and really give us a lot of confidence. Not only does this mineralization continue at depth, but it also continues at depth on multiple structures. So what we deliver in a phase one scoping study is really just the first phase of what we see as being a multi-decade mine life. Now, we've got that in front of us in a pre-feasibility study to demonstrate that two-decade-long underground component, but we've hit that mineralization already. So we know it's there. It's just a matter of fleshing it out. So it's a very, very exciting milestone for the company to get this initial resource out, just the shallow stuff, and we've got all that deeper stuff yet to flesh out.
It's interesting, Chris, because when you first started, as you said a moment ago, and for those that possibly are not familiar with some of these terms and terminology, we might dumb it down. I know you geologists out there will start going, no, we know what this is. But you know what? I've got a great investor audience out there and they want to understand it a little bit more. Because when you first went into this area, into this, this district, if you like, because it's quite a large landholding that you've got down there, I believe, But you wanted to go deep and you wanted to find a porphyry. And I think you once said to me, it's like a fried egg, Kerry. It's got a cover, but you've got to go deep to find the high grade. So when Scott said to you to flip it around, does that mean that this scoping study, which is the economics of is this going to be economically feasible, does that mean that having changed your thinking around it, that it will, A, be quicker to get to the resource and to mining and less expensive, putting it into simple terms?
Sure. So the fried egg analogy for a porphyry, and just to, as an aside, geologists invent their own language so that engineers don't understand them, so they can leave the room. Thank you very much.
I love it.
But look, the fried egg analogy for a porphyry was that they have characteristic alteration zonations around them where that will be considered the white of the fried egg. So you know that you're into a fried egg, but you're not in the central portion. And so it was a case of trying to vector within the white to get to the yolk, where in a porphyry, that's where all of the copper and the metal resides in the middle. So that was our targeting philosophy, as I say, for that first 5 years. But what we found is that, and look, porphyries typically are large and large tonnage and low grade systems. So, you know, the average grade of a porphyry might be 0.5% copper or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Whereas what we ended up finding was structurally controlled, so on faults, mineralization that had come up faults, but it's much higher grade. And so this recent announcement, 10.4 meters at 4.3% copper and 3 grams gold, is significantly better than sort of grade than what you would get from porphyry. It's narrower, admittedly, but it's much higher value. So it is, as you say, it's cheaper to develop. It's easier to develop. And we're talking in the order of $200 to $300 million worth of capex versus $8 or $9 billion of capex.
Wow.
To develop a porphyry.
That's massive. Like somebody listening.
It is.
That's massive.
And look, whilst we still believe that there may be a porphyry down there, and that is a game changer if we were able to identify that. But let's be honest, a company our size trying to develop something that big, it's like the mouse and the elephant. We're just a bit wrong sized for that type of deposit. Whereas this narrower, high grade style of mineralization that we have defined, and we've defined it right at surface, so we don't have to go a long way down. It's right there. That's better sized for a company our size. We can take that on. We've developed projects of a similar size in our previous companies, so it's not something that scares us. Certainly. The big porphyries really are the domain of the BHPs and the Newcrests of this world, whereas this deposit is ideally suited to our size of company and our capabilities. So the excitement is that we're closing off a chapter where we've spent almost 2.5 years drilling this thing out to a high level of confidence. We don't expect that we're going to have to go back in and infill anything. The job's been done once and it's been done properly. And we get into this phase of demonstrating that the economics are robust. And then we start to put on these extra decades of mine life at depth with a transition from open pit phase one into phase two underground.
Right. And is the thinking around this, Chris, to get into mining the copper? I mean, let's face it, copper at the moment is in short supply globally. For those that don't know, we are heading into a green revolution, and copper is a commodity which is, I guess, those that are out there and are mining it, it's at lower grades. So it's a valuable commodity to have. Being that it's at surface, does that mean that you can get into mining quicker, more cost effectively, and therefore it's good for the investors, the shareholders, long term?
Absolutely. So it is near surface. That means that we, early in the mine life, we start to actually process copper and produce copper out of a process plant. And it means that we get our cash flow a lot earlier than if you were having to put in a whole bunch of underground infrastructure to develop something that might be a kilometer down. So that's not the case. We're access to the ore body almost straight away. And it means that we can be in production cheaper and quicker with a shorter period between investment and payback than otherwise would be the case. In terms of the copper demand situation, there is no dissenting views as far as I can see in terms of the massive amount of demand that is coming through with trying to decarbonize the global economy. This is an imperative that's recognized by governments around the world. The transition to electric vehicles and wind power, solar power, all of those require huge additional amounts of copper that can't be supplied by current mines, even to the extent where the forecasts are that between now and 2050, we need 10 Escondida copper mines, which Escondida is the largest copper mine in the world. It's been going for over 30 years. It's getting pretty mature, but we need 10 of those to satisfy the demand. And there is nothing on the horizon of anything like that scale. So I think the reality is that anyone who has a quality copper asset, and in this case, high grade, near surface, first world jurisdiction asset, then these assets are going to become increasingly valuable as we move into that copper supply deficit. And the prices at the moment are around $10,000 US a ton. Forecasts are up to $25,000 US a ton. So more than doubling the current price. And personally, I see that as realistic. And I can't see any other way, because it's a massive crunch on supply. It's just not there.
When you're going into this sort of the economics of this particular, the Kaylee load, are you being conservative in your numbers when you're putting this study together?
Look, I think the proper way to deal with these things is to do a sensitivity analysis. And so what we'll do in the scoping study document is that we'll look at a couple of the key inputs, which would be metallurgical recovery, or how much of the copper present in the ore are you actually able to extract, what the copper price is, and just model at various assumptions what that looks like. So we'll use today's copper price. We'll use minus 10 and 20%, plus 10 and 20%, and the extreme forecast, $25,000, and just show people what this project looks like. An interesting aspect of this project is that, aside from the Kaylee load, there's also a near surface chalcocite blanket that's relatively low grade. So it's 28 million tons at 0.4% copper. Needless to say, as you move into higher price environments, more and more of that lower grade mineralization becomes economic to process. And so our sensitivity to copper price won't be a straight line graph. It'll be an exponential graph, because more and more of that lower grade material becomes economic. So it's an interesting dynamic. And even to the extent that I wouldn't be surprised if people start thinking of Staveley as an option on the copper price because of that exponential value accretion as the copper price moves up.
We're talking about the Kaylee load, but if I look at the amount that you have, you're holding down there in Victoria, are you going to be doing some more exploration at the same time as you're doing these studies, or is the focus purely, because you've done a lot of work since we spoke 6 months ago, and, you know, congratulations, Chris, because, you know, it does take, for those that don't know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of drilling, and a lot of discipline to get where you are today. But while you're moving into, I guess, the numbers part and the economics of this, are you also going to be doing some exploration to other parts of where you have down there, this district?
Yeah, sure. We're probably 75 to 80% of the way through a regional exploration program that involved regional air core and soil auger geochemistry, based on some really substantial geophysical programs that we flew last year. So we identified some 19 regional targets, and the logic being that we wanted to assess whether there was something really substantial out there other than the Cayley load that might shift our focus. Now, we haven't got all our results back yet. We have had a high success rate in terms of hitting alteration and sulfides, that sort of thing. But that doesn't guarantee that we get, you know, copper or gold or what have you. So we've got to wait for those lab results. But aside from that regional work and the likelihood of something else coming in, the next phase, as I see it, particularly as we sort of focus in on the Cayley load, is probably more looking at defining that mineralization at depth. And so quite a substantial program. I don't feel the need to define it to a level where it's mining ready, because we're talking about mine life 7, 8 years, 9, 10 years down the track. So I don't need to spend millions and millions of dollars today to define that portion of the mine life. I just need to demonstrate that it's there. And so that's the case with the Cayley load, and it's also the case with the Carroll's VMS near Ararat that we've got as well. We only defined that down to 250 meters. It's still going. It's 850 meters long. There's no reason why we can't pull that down another 250 meters and also give ourselves a chance to find another one of them as we're drilling in that area. So there is a lot of drilling to be done for this next phase, what we would call the pre-feasibility phase, that just incremental additions to what we've already defined. It's the high value, low risk sort of add-ons that are really important at this phase. But we're not going to leave any stone unturned in the regional context either, because we do want to know if there's still a big one lurking out there and it's relatively underexplored.
And I think that's important. It is relatively underexplored. But Chris, where you are, and you talked about copper, you've also got some gold down there and you've got some silver. What's the process? Like, are you going to build a processing plant? Is it too early to talk about that? Where do you go from here as you go? Let's just say the economics have done. You've done the mineral resource estimate. You've done your scoping study. The numbers are all stacking up. Are you going to build your own plant? What's that look like, and how long down the road? I'm thinking like the investors who are sitting there going, but Kerry, when's he going to be producing copper?
Yeah, indeed. Look, certainly the process in Victoria, I would think graciously call it less mature than the process would be in a jurisdiction like Western Australia, for example. And we probably need to go through what at a very minimum would be 2.5 years, possibly about 4 years worth of permitting. So that's I think, a reality of the jurisdiction which we're operating.
Sorry, Chris, to interrupt you, but did you say 2.5 to 4 years of permitting?
That's right. So
is that specific to Victoria, or is that Australia-wide? It sounds an awful long time.
It is a long time. I think the process is not as mature in Victoria as it would be in Western Australia. There's a lot of work that we've got to do around energy, water, tailings, all of those sorts of things. They're probably a little bit more sensitive in a more high density land use area like Victoria than what you would have in Western Australia. But I think the reality is that timeline is not dissimilar to other jurisdictions in Australia. For example, New South Wales and you know, it's some of the recent projects there are not developed in over a much longer time frame, which can be frustrating. But we're reasonably comfortable that the process in Victoria is well understood, it's well documented, and that the pathway is well understood by everybody involved, and that you can progress a project to development without, but you have to do the work. You have to do everything very, very thoroughly. And that really harks back to why we've drilled this deposit out to a high degree of confidence, because we don't want to have to come in and redo it. We want to do it properly first time.
Which I think is admirable. Now, I have to go back to what you said earlier, which is that copper you know, there are not that many advanced copper projects, yet the supply-demand curve is completely out of whack. Chris, do you think going forward that one of the big boys is going to go knock, 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 hello, before you get too much further down the road?
Yeah, look, I think the reality is for a company like us, we're publicly listed and you know, there's nothing, we can't stop anyone taking a position in us either on market or then subsequently making an offer. I think the way that we need to proceed is on the basis that we are going to develop this. We need to do our work to a standard that we're going to be happy with, that we've addressed all of the risks. And I would assume that it's to a standard that's any incoming party would have a high expectation as well. And so we must make sure that the work is done properly and that we haven't really shot ourselves in the foot by doing a shoddy job. If the projects, you know, any of these sorts of companies will want to come and have a look at a data room, and if on the sniff test it doesn't stack up, then they'll walk. So that's why we're absolutely adamant that what we do must be done to a very, very high standard, because it needs to pass our hurdles, which are very high anyways, but they also need to pass the hurdles of any potential incoming party that might be interested in making us an offer. So it's imperative as part of our business case that we do the work to that standard, and that they're very comfortable coming in if they want to make us an offer that shareholders are willing to accept.
Well, and I think it's important for, as you said right at the beginning, you've done this before, so you know the process in order to make sure that as kind of all the ducks are in the row, all the coppers in a row, if you like.
Yeah, look, I think in the mining industry, you know, you go from exploration, which is extreme risk. It's a very speculative investment. As you get closer and closer to production, my job is to remove risk from the project, progressively removing risk as we best define the resource, as we best map out the most efficient and cost-effective development pathways, how it's to be processed, how it's to be permitted, all of the baseline study work that we do in terms of environmental, flora and fauna, water studies, all of that sort of stuff. And so it's really just de-risking to the point that the anyone looks at this project and says, no, that's robust, I'm comfortable with it, and I'm willing to pay top dollar for something that's, you know, it's like buying a secondhand car. You want something with low mileage, you know, that's one owner, you know, kept in the garage. But you know, and people in the industry know what they're looking for. And if they see something that's been flogged, it's had shitty maintenance, and it hasn't been for its proper service periods, and you haven't done the right thing, they'll see it straight away and they'll walk.
I love that analogy, Chris. And for those out there that are not, like, I've got investors that often get in touch with me and go, I didn't understand what he was saying, but that's a great analogy. Like, if you're going to buy a secondhand car, you want to make sure the logbooks are good and it's been kept in good order. I like that.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same with a mineral project. If they look under the bonnet and, you know, it looks ugly, they're not going to buy.
Now, Chris, I want to get to some numbers here a little bit without giving too much away, but I know that, you know, you and your team have put your own personal money into this. So, you've got skin in the game. It's, yep, it's something that's really important, I think, for people to understand that, you know, it's in your best interest to make sure that this happens. Now, we've had a really crappy day on the markets today. So in sort of value terms, the share price hasn't really done very much, not surprising after today. But just talk me through where you think the value additions are going to come from. Like, in other words, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is not financial advice. Go talk to your financial advisor. Do your own homework. This is Chris and I just having a chit chat. Sorry, Chris, just sure. To throw that one in. What do you think?
And very, very good advice to seek professional advice. The facts That our enterprise value, which is the value of the company less our cash, is about $100 million at the moment. We've got a high-grade, near-surface copper discovery with appreciable gold and silver in it. It doesn't have any what we would call nasties in the industry. It doesn't have any arsenic in it. There's no cadmium. There's none of the sort of stuff that people will run a mile from. It's a nice, clean project. It's in a first world jurisdiction, in a rising copper price environment. It just, to me, it ticks all of those boxes. I don't want to, and I never have had any compunction to head over to South America or Africa and work in these high risk jurisdictions. You know, places like Ecuador, they had an election a couple of years ago that took a socialist party out of government and put in a new, more capital friendly party. And next election, it could swing exactly the opposite way. And so the companies that have rushed into that jurisdiction may, you know, the sands shift under your feet very quickly in those jurisdictions. Whereas in any Australian state, I think you can have a much higher degree of confidence that your asset is secure, that you can have reliable supply networks, that there is ready access to skilled labor, you know, all of those sorts of things in a world that's a little bit uncertain at the moment, but critically needs copper for this, one of the biggest cultural shifts ever. Yeah. In the history of mankind, that we're going from a heavily carbon-based economy to a renewable-based economy, and it all centers, every aspect of that centers around copper.
That is what people need to understand. Now, Chris, I could talk to you for hours, and hopefully we'll catch up in person one day soon, but we've run out of time. You know what I like to do towards the end, my audience does, which is, I want three reasons, not 10, just three reasons why investors should be sitting up and, or our audience, I should say, should sit up and take notice right now of Staveley Minerals down there in Victoria.
Absolutely. So, high-grade copper deposit near surface. It's in a first world jurisdiction. It's in a rising copper price environment. And we haven't finished drilling it out. There's more to come. Beautiful.
Watch this space, ladies and gentlemen. I told you he was going to be busy for 6 months. It's almost 6 months to the day since I last spoke to Chris. Let's not make it that long. Let's do it another one in about 3 months. Keep our little audience updated. But congratulations for hitting all those milestones, and all the best for the scoping study and that initial mineral resource. And we'll look forward to chatting to you again in the future. Chris Cairns, Staveley Minerals, thanks for joining me on Small Caps today.
Thank you very much, Kerry. Appreciate it.